You and Brandy have become sort of like Gomez and Morticia for us.
Yes, you really have to.
Where
Yes,
you
absolutely.
guys live in this amazing world, and do your own thing, and you're just so caught up in it and having such a great time that it makes the rest of us. I mean, I'm sitting there reading what you're doing, then I look up and I'm like, God, I'm playing Shadow of Mordor again. So no, it is.
I'm
You
the
are
same way.
the
I'm like,
bar by which we set our lives. So yes.
That's just very sweet, guys. Thank you very much.
You guys, look at them. They're doing something cool again. I should put on pants. I should wear shoes
and
get out.
And then I'm sitting here freaking eating corn chips.
Right.
This guy is in his garage constructing this wonderful piece of Christmas Halloween art. I'm like,
hey, honey, I've decided to start doing some paper craft for the D&D game so the kids can really get a sense of what the board game looks like. Oh, here's Joseph making a life-size Krampus.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate that. It's a lot of fun, obviously. All right, so Thor, we'll just jump right into it. I know we have lots of things to talk about, so I will open the gate and let's sit down and share mead at the Asgardian table here.
I love it. All right, say when.
Okay.
Welcome to the Lovat Lounge, the gathering place for the gentleman nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned. There are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the halls of the Lobot Lounge. We're gathered here around a steaming flagging of mead, are the gentlemen nerds, to discuss the great Norse god himself, the mighty Thor, and his newest film appearance in Thor Ragnarok. Here, gathered around our table, are Mark Finn.
Let's do Get Help.
That's so embarrassing. Aaron DiArrive.
I say thee nay.
And I am your host and emotional touchstone, Joseph Otinos. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge and this very special Thor Ragnarok edition of The Gentleman Nerds.
Hail and well met.
Yes. Here we are. Once again, Marvel has raised the bar on superhero films.
Yep. Oh my gosh. What they are. Are we 15-0 now? Is that it?
It's
even better for me, guys, because this is the first Marvel movie that I've really enjoyed in some time. And so I'm raring to go and talk about this.
Well, they changed what we, as far as perception goes, and then they made a very conscious decision to do it. We're going to get into the minutia here in a bit, but Thor has always been kind of a bombastic, avast and thou, and thou, how dare you, have a care, and all that stuff. And here, Thor is relatable and funny and self-deprecating, and he is a likable character, almost to the level of a Tony Stark with his humor.
Right.
You know, I adored what they did with him because let the character grow and evolve, and that's what he's done.
Yep.
You know?
No, yeah. This is definitely, I mean, I grew up reading Thor, and he's my favorite. I'll say it up front. He is my favorite Marvel superhero.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
I had interest very early on in mythology. And of course, while everybody was reading, you know, the Bullfinch's, you know, Greek mythology and all that, in the back of that little mythology book that we all read in grade school or high school or whatever it was, there is like, you know, 10 pages on Norse mythology.
yeah.
All the rest of it is, you know, Hercules and Perseus and all those guys. But at the very end, it's a bunch of stuff, of a really condensed of Norse mythology. And that's what I always focused on. and became very, very obsessed with. But so I love the character, and I agree with you, Joseph, when you say that his character in the comics, it's not too much of a stretch to say, is this stoic, stodgy, usually he's the straight man, he's the butt of jokes. You know, he's an action guy. He's definitely like, you know, sort of that Conan enough talk kind of guy.
Yes.
But
yes.
He is that very, you know, come forward, hear Mjolnir. He's that kind of, it's like he's playing on a stage in an opera or something.
Right.
And
right,
everyone
right.
around him, and especially, and we'll talk about especially the most controversial thing about the Warriors 3. But, everyone around him provides the humor. They're always cracking the jokes that unfortunately sometimes Thor is the straight man for or the butt of. And that's fine. And I love the adventures and the colorful world. And of course, I mean, come on, Jack Kirby designed something that was beautiful and amazing and colorful. Colorful really is the word that springs to mind. If you look at a lot of those early Thor comics, bursting with color. And then, of course, my favorite run on Thor, Walt Simonson, came on to write and draw the comic. And he brought in a bunch of elements from the myths, from the Norse myths, and made it even better. I mean, he took something and made it even better. Yeah. And now I dare say Marvel Comics. But he kept Thor sort of that stodgy, I say thee nay kind of a character. And then introduced a lot of, again, it was always the characters around Thor, whether it was Loki or Baldur or new villains like Malekith or whoever it is, they're always the guys that are smiling and saying funny things. And Thor, right. Thor is scowling and holding Mjolnir and ready to go forth and do battle. And I love what has been done with him in this most recent movie.
Well, much of the credit on this has to go to Taikai. I want to say Watiti.
Taika Watiti. Yep.
Taika Watiti, who, of course, you know, wrote and directed the amazing "What We Do in the Shadows," and played one of the vampire rumors in that film, and has given and you could tell, you know, that humor is there, that ridiculous humor of the moment.
I saw a video where he did a sizzle reel. For those of you who don't know what a sizzle reel is a director takes a bunch of footage from other movies and he edits them together, and they usually put a song or some music to it, and then he takes that to the studio executives and says, this is what I'm thinking of, this is the kind of tone and feel and look for the movie that I'm trying to make,
and, like a visual
and,
pitch
exactly, and Taika Waititi did that for Thor, which had the Led Zeppelin song. They actually went and got the rights to the Led Zeppelin song because it was in his sizzle reel when he was showing them. This is what I want to do.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
But the humor, absolutely. He mentioned that he wanted just such a fun Thor, a fun character.
Yeah.
And that's what we got.
Without losing Thor as you know, the warrior.
Exactly.
Without losing Thor as the hero.
Exactly.
You know, there's a level of him now that's almost. Did you guys watch The Brave and the Bold? Cartoon.
I love the Brave and the Bold. Yeah.
Do you remember?
I'm not a fan.
Oh no!
Big, a nice. It's a love letter to Silver Age Batman, in my
opinion. Definitely. Yeah.
But what they did with Aquaman in that series is made him kind of a humorous warrior type of Conan slash, but kind of a goofball at the same time. Yes. I mean, he was always like, "Ha! And yes, and this is great, and I am a great warrior."
That's the first thing I thought of, Joseph. It's like, oh my god, he's like Aquaman in Brave and Bold. Yeah.
So he's very much like, that's what heroes do, you know. Yes. He literally calls himself a hero. I'm a hero. That's what heroes do, you know. So getting into Thor Ragnarok. And we're gonna take it piece by piece, gentlemen, and we'll obviously have plenty of room for commentary and reflection. But I want to begin with the opening of Thor Ragnarok, where we meet the giant, the fire giant Surtur, voiced of course by Clancy Brown, and Thor.
Surtur.
Thank you. See, you're gonna have to help me with these Norse pronunciations.
Okay.
Surtur. Who's, you know, and frankly, I didn't quite catch his name in the film because I know Thor said it, and I was like, what the heck was that guy's name? A big fire dude? Yeah. Okay, cool.
It goes by anyway, real fast, yeah.
But that sequence of him hanging by a chain in front of him while he describes the death of Asgard and Ragnarok, and Thor is slowly spinning on this chain, and he has to interrupt him and say, wait a minute, hold it, hold it. I'm coming around again. I'm not doing this. It's just doing it by itself. Here I come. You know? And the fire demon is very patient, you know, but he starts to... Because this is my villain reveal. I'm making this big speech. And, oh, you interrupted me. Okay. Why don't wait? Gotta wait. Gotta wait. Okay, now I'm back to it.
Okay, now I will do...
You know? It's just so brilliant.
And it was
dumb.
The perfect way to set the tone to let you know what kind of Thor we're about to experience.
Right.
And it was the perfect opening. I mean...
I will say,
was just laughing out loud every time that happened because it was so unexpected.
I can say this with some assurity, and it's less to do with I'm not making an excuse for anything, but rather one of the things that the comics have done and always did and always will do. Is there's always a tonal shift from creative team to creative team. Sometimes it's not a noticeable tonal shift because they're told, do this. And then other times it's, hey, we really need you to shake things up. Go ahead and, you know, let's take your interpretation of it. And I can say the best example I can give you from what we're talking about is Simonson's first Thor run. Was a huge shakeup from what had gone on before. The series had gotten bogged down in a lot of the these and thous and those and thuses. Mm-hmm. And Simonson was the one who essentially, you know, had the temper tantrum, had Thor lose his hammer. They gave it to Beta Ray Bill. Mm-hmm. He has to go on a quest to sort of redeem himself. He gets turned into a frog.
Yeah.
Does any of this sound familiar, you guys?
Yeah. The adventure in Central Park when he was a frog was very
Yeah. And so you know, I think the three different directors in the three different Thor movies do a really good job of sort of walking you down into that. You know, the first Thor movie. Could not have been directed by anybody other than Kenneth Branagh because Branagh understands Shakespearean drama, which is exactly what that was.
Yeah.
And then in the second movie, we've got him being more relatable. He's in Earth. And then in the third movie, I don't remember if somebody mentioned it in the film or if it got mentioned like outside of the purview of the film. That you've been too long on Earth or you've spent too much time with these people.
Right.
It might have been Loki that even says it. I'll have to go back and double check.
I believe so. I think I believe Loki says that he's been spending too much time.
Yeah, and so but the character arc is beautifully prescribed. And so the fact that we start out with this wonderful sense of humor, this beautiful bit, and him, you know, talking to the skeleton, and something that I didn't think I was going to see, they took the little secret ending from Doctor Strange and put it straight into the movie.
Yeah.
Just drop it straight in there while we're at it.
Well, we'll get to Strange here in a second. So let's you know, if we follow along in the course of the film,
yes.
Thor has this amazing opening battle against Surtur.
Surtur.
Yes. Surtur.
Like hello, sir. Surtur.
Got it. Okay. So he battles. Thank you, guys. Surtur. And all these crazy flaming monsters. And, of course, you know, Thor is Thor, so he wins. It's an amazing battle. And the soundtrack, of course, you get the Led Zeppelin song. And this is the first minor complaint that I will reveal, is that song worked so well in the trailer. It worked so well for that opening. It got me very excited. And then later on in the movie, in the end... We hear it again, and that's where I went. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. We'll get to the end when we get to the end. Yeah, but I
would say that's a very minor quibble, though.
Very minor. Yeah. Very minor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a rousing song, but we heard it once before, and you know, it wasn't like a awesome. It was like the song again. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, minor. So Thor defeats Surtur and returns to Asgard to put his helm which very funny when he says, was that a helmet? I thought that was part of, I thought those were your eyebrows. I thought those were your eyebrows. it's your helmet. Okay. Got it.
And by the way, so let me just interrupt to say,
yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. Thor went from the straight man to the guy who's cracking the jokes, and other people around him. Banner becomes a straight man. Loki becomes a straight man. Searcher is the straight man. And that is just beyond wonderful. That is such a cool way to handle such a fun character. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And literally, if you think about it, his experiences on Earth, working with the Avengers, spending time with Stark and with Captain America and with Banner and with Black Widow and, you know, and War Machine and the Falcon and all these characters he's been interacting with, of course he's going to pick up some of this humor.
Yeah.
And particularly Stark. I mean, you could almost hear some of the snark coming out of Thor
being
originated because he's hanging out with Tony Stark, you know? So, and it's not like he's still a hero. This whole plan with Surtur, he has a plan. He's got this great heroic plan, and he timed it wrong. But he, by God, at the end, he was like, you know, oh, sorry, I timed this wrong. Give me a second. Okay, now I've got my hammer. Let's go.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So it's very much like Thor to be arrogant and mock the villain by going, you know what? I'm gonna defeat you. Of course, I'm gonna defeat you. I'm a hero. I'm Thor. You know, he's still the same character, but now he's delivering this dialogue more of a snarky. You know, I thought those were your eyebrows.
And in fact, if you contrast, because the sequence is very similar to the first movie where they go to the Frost Giants realm. Thor is full of fervor and arrogance, but that's the difference. When he goes into that setting, and again, as Mark said, it was much more of a Shakespearean kind of. He's much more sort of bombastic and arrogant, and I will show these, you know. And now in this one, in the third one, it's confidence. He knows now. Uh-huh. It's like I've dealt with this so many times.
Yeah.
I know exactly. I can play this. I can play this by the numbers, and I know how it's going to go. And it is an arc. You exactly described it correctly. An arc. He goes from that same scene, but handling it very differently, to now he's in that scene again. But now I know who I am. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm a hero. That's what heroes do. And it's great. It's great. Sorry.
So back to Asgard with the helm of Surtur to put into Odin's vault. He arrives, and the last time we saw Odin, he was replaced on the throne by the god of mischief, Loki, played again by Tom Hiddleston. And we return to Asgard, and we see that Loki is living the high life as Odin and presenting himself as a hero with giant statues to himself in Asgard because he was the savior who sacrificed his life from Thor the Dark World. And there's a play that's recreating that scene in Thor the Dark World, and he's such a hero, build a statue to me that with the horns fantastic. And
you know the minute we recognize Matt Damon my god, this is fucking
very
brilliant.
Funny stuff because the play the play is the thing, ladies and gentlemen. And here's Loki as Odin sitting on a dais eating grapes surrounded by beautiful women, just living the life of that he always wanted to, he always felt like he deserved. And of course Thor comes in and realizes instantly, oh wait a minute, something's wrong here, you know.
And one of my favorite lines in the whole movie is Anthony Hopkins going, oh shit.
Yes, exactly. I know. It was the best. Hopkins playing Loki was fantastic. Oh shit.
Yes. Oh shit. Yes. Very much so. We do, I almost forgot, when Thor returns via the Bifrost, he does meet the new gatekeeper of the Bifrost, Scourge. Scourge, who we all know as the Executioner from Marvel Comics as well, who, by the way, looks exactly like the Executioner from Marvel Comics. Right. And, of course, that's Carl Urban, who plays Scourge and who we might know as Dr. Bones McCoy from the new Star Trek run as well as from Lord of the Rings as one of the writers of Rohan, I believe he was.
Hey, guys, is it okay if in my world that's actually Matt Damon that Loki brought to Asgard to be in his play.
Yes.
Because he really liked Matt Damon. And no one's going to believe him anyway. So you might as well come along.
Right.
Is it cool if we do that?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Very cool. Thank you very much.
And by the way, so
this movie just got 30% better.
His brother, Luke Hemsworth, played actor Thor on the stage. And
that's right.
Sam Neill, was Odin.
Yes.
Oh God.
Well, of course they went and got Sam Neill. He's got nothing going on right now, anyways, oh, man. Right.
Hey,
brilliant.
Look, serious.
No, it was that. But again, now we're into the second sequence, which is just as funny, just as entertaining, just as surprising. Because see, old Thor, he would have gone into the throne room, and
Loki.
Oh, right. Yeah. And Odin would have been sitting on the chair. My son, you have returned. I where have you been? You know, it would have been played completely straight. Right. And nope, that is not at all what Taika Waititi decided to do. God bless him. And right. Instead, we get this absolutely memorable, entertaining sequence of watching that delicious play. So
that's very fun.
Oh my God.
So Thor forces Loki to reveal himself with a nice little trick with his hammer and gets him to admit what he did, and then says, well, where's Odin? And he goes, well, I'll take you to him. And of course we find out that Loki stripped Odin of his power and deposited him in an old folks home in New York City, which is no longer there.
Yep.
So this is where we begin to really enjoy once again the great chemistry that Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston have together as Loki and Thor. Yep. Every time they're together, there's that undeniable chemistry that they've got, as arch nemesis and brothers, and a begrudging respect for one another that you could tell that each of them have. They grew up together, you know? So it's one of these things where I know you so well, and you annoy the hell out of me, but, you know, I need you now, or I don't want to see you anymore, and then I see you again, and I mourned you, brother. You were dead. Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. Remember that time I turned you into a frog? Yeah, I remember. You know, that level of back and forth.
That was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
So they go back to New York, and then it attracts the attention. Loki's presence on Earth attracts the attention of one of the guardians of the planet, the mystic master of the mystic arts, Stephen Strange, who immediately says, whoa, something's up here, because he's got, you know, he's all seeing. He's got the guard, the security up. Loki's on the planet. Bam. I love that. I love the fact that you knew who it was by the way that portal opened underneath Loki's feet.
Yeah,
you knew it was Strange.
Yep.
So that was brilliant. And then we get a Thor and Doctor Strange encounter, which was lovely.
Inevitable. I mean, obviously, we even saw it in as you mentioned, in Doctor Strange, the movie. It was inevitable that those guys were going to meet, and they were going to interact, and they were going to try to figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very glad that they included the sequence. And again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, guys, but in comes Thor into the Sanctum Sanctorum. And he's cracking jokes, and he's making little snide comments, and he turns Stephen Strange into the straight man.
Oh yeah, easily.
And so it's just I don't think I ever stopped smiling. That was the thing about this movie. My face ached by the time I walked out, because I never stopped smiling at what Chris Hemsworth was doing, his character was doing, what the plot was doing. And we're going to get into it when they finally get to the planet of the Game Master, but not the Grandmaster. But holy cow! I mean, they're talking about the introduction of Valkyrie as one of the greatest Marvel introductions of a character ever, where she's like staggers down the ramp and not wait, he's mine, and off the fucking ramp she goes, boom. It's just like, what? This is a Marvel hero? So anyway, I jumped ahead. Sorry, did we want to talk about Stephen Strange? Or
yeah, I meant to mention a couple of things about that. But before we get into that, did you say Valkyrie, not Valkyrie?
Oh, you could say it either way. I mean,
okay, yeah. I'm just checking.
Valkyrie is probably how most people would say it. I think the original word is Valkyr.
But Valkyrie is how the pedestrians choose to pronounce it.
Yes,
those
most
of you
would say Valkyrie.
Yes, those of you who are not immune to the charms of the North mythos, feel free to pronounce it Valkyrie, follow along.
I'm the guy that went to fucking Oslo and was corrected by an Icelander that I was pronouncing Mjolnir incorrectly, and he was like, wow. Mjolnir.
Okay, I'm sure they were Icelanders, all of them. But
isn't Thor the actual pronunciation like Tor, more of a T sound? In the original, Anthony Hopkins would pronounce it like Tor.
Yeah,
he would say more of a sound at the beginning. Anyway,
imagine that. It's a totally different language, but yeah.
fun fact, my first name, Mark, is actually pronounced Engelbert. So, you know, I think we're learning a lot here today.
If we could get through the cloud of Aaron's pretentiousness, we'll move on.
Hey, what? I'm just the one that's a Mjolnir.
More of an ice storm, really.
Mjolnir.
It's really the
odds. Yeah, it's like saying Mordor.
Now and forever, Mordor. It's going to be Mjolnir for me.
Meow, meow.
Yeah, meow, meow. Well, that's exactly how most people would say it. Meow, meow. Look, it's meow, meow.
Meow, meow. He's looking for his cat. when Stephen Strange first appears, I thought that was a great shot of him floating, his silhouette backed by the giant stained glass window and floating into the scene. Very amazing appearance of Doctor Strange, the master of the mystic art. And Thor's just like, huh, wizards, cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And that was a classic comic book Doctor Strange entrance, too. I mean, that was straight out of the pages of a comic book.
Floats right in.
Yeah, awesome. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. But his exit is straight out of Marvel Comics movies. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right, I've had enough of your shit.
Well, because Loki shows up again, and Loki is obviously incensed because he was falling for 30 minutes. And then Doctor Strange takes Loki and Odin, Loki and Thor, and sends them to where Odin really is. And here we get the real Odin, played by Anthony Hopkins, who looks like a charming old man with an eye patch on the shores of some Icelandic, I don't know where he was, in Norway somewhere, looking at the sea and dying, knowing he's about to die.
Yeah, there's definite shades of a Dumbledore kind of a vibe on this, and not in a bad way or in a derivative way, but just it's real obvious that, you know, he's gonna reappear at a crucial time. But because more than once he says it the first time here, but he says it, you know, he reiterates it later. Asgard is a people, not a place, that's very important for this. Yeah.
And just as much as Thor's hammer isn't the source of his power, it was a way for him to channel and control his power. The power is Thor, not the hammer.
Correct.
Which is going to be very important in just a few moments, because after Odin passes away and floats off into the distance, he reveals the truth, which is my firstborn, my daughter, Hela, the goddess of death, has been in exile, and my life is the only thing that's been keeping her away. Once I die, folks, she's coming back. And we're like, oh, wow, that's sudden and disturbing. And what?
Yeah.
And sure enough, as soon as Odin fades away, a portal opens and in strolls Cate Blanchett as Hela, the goddess of death.
Yep.
Aaron, didn't you say that this may be your favorite Marvel villain?
Hela certainly. I mean, Loki is my favorite Marvel villain.
Yeah.
But no, Hela, I mean, of course, Hela is right up there, which is, you know, the other thing, as the Norse myth geek in the audience, I'm looking up going, she is said to be the daughter, the firstborn of Odin, but it would be interesting if, you know, that her mother was not Freya. Frigga. If her mother was someone else. In the myths, of course, Hela is actually the daughter of Loki and the giantess Angerboda. Mm-hmm. And so I love that Hela was never, like, she is part giant because she's the daughter of, actually she's full giant, so she's the daughter of a half giant and a giant, or in the case of Loki, a runty giant. But anyway, I'm sitting there watching the movie, listening to the dialogue, and in my mind going, so is she the half sister of Thor because her mom is someone else? Or, and the other thing that I kept thinking is, all right, here's the goddess of death. You know she's going to play a part in the Infinity War with Thanos, because Thanos in the comic and the story is in love with death. But death as an entity, as a thing that appears, has not been introduced in the Marvel comics yet. So I think Hela is going to take the place of that. I think Hela is going to become character.
Yeah. It's a very strong idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
One of the things that you have talked about at length is that you think that Marvel villain motivations are weak, and they're not always memorable.
Yeah.
And to me, this is one of the most memorable Marvel villains with a strong, clear motivation. Mm-hmm. I was cast out. I've come back to reclaim what is mine.
Yep.
Family is not going to stand in the way. Yep. I'm going to remake this in my own image. And in fact, I may as well just destroy it and start over from scratch because this is some bullshit.
Yep.
I mean, from the get-go, her motivations are spelled out pretty much within 30 to 45 seconds.
She is diametrically
and she rocks it.
Yeah,
you know?
She is the diametric opposite of all my complaints about. She's not evil Thor, okay? She's not evil Thor. I remember her name. As Mark just said, I remember her motivation. I know exactly what she wants. She's performed to perfection by Kate Blanchett.
Yes, absolutely.
Everything about what I don't like about Marvel villains was not true at all about Hela. So thank God. Yes. So in that respect, yes, my favorite Marvel villain in a long, long, long time.
Certainly up there for me. I will say that I did feel she was a little one-dimensional in the classic scene-chewing, pithy, evil one-liners, you know, that she was delivering. Yes, she reclaimed her throne, and then the next motivation was to get the Bifrost open so she could start conquering and taking over. As she always wanted to do. Her motivation with Odin was, we're better than everyone else. Let's go ahead and take over everything.
Right,
and her bloodlust was insatiable, which is why Odin banished her to begin with. And I get that, but Cate Blanchett is gorgeous and slinks with the best of them. And her gestures and the way she sits on the throne.
Yeah. Right.
Her legs together at an angle with her gorgeous posterior jutting forward and that kind of a, you know, high-shouldered look. Amazing.
Side saddle on the throne.
Wonderful. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Gorgeous, beautiful. But I was, you know, I don't know. I felt like it was still more of the same in for me, at least, in Marvel villain-wise. I liked... I wanted to see a little bit more, not vulnerability, but a little bit more of an internal thing with her. And I got the one note villain of, you know,
well, let me offer a couple of points real quick then.
Okay.
You know, there's that wonderful scene where she's walking through the halls and kind of snarking about it. And then she reaches up with her eldritch power and knocks away the frescoes to reveal the old history. Like, here's the stuff you don't know about. Here's the stuff that he papered over because he was ashamed. He was embarrassed. This is what we did to get here.
Right.
And boy, was that interesting. You know,
that's
the kind of thing hopefully people don't overlook when they come out, because this is always the case when you're dealing with what nation builders had to do to build their nation, you know?
Yep. No, I loved that element of it, because when you look at, you know, why Odin, in essence, chooses to remove himself from the situation. And if you go back, of course, this wasn't the plan, but it fits beautifully. If you go back and look at the arc of Odin's character over the first, second, and third movie, he's building to this. He is coming from a position of, I must choose a worthy heir, because he knows what he's done and he knows the sins of his past, and he doesn't wish that to continue. He's looking for that proper heir, and that's why he wants Thor to be all the things that in many ways Odin was not.
And Loki could never be.
Exactly. So I love that Hela tells us. It literally isn't just, you know, oh, I was evil and I got locked away and now I'm free and I want to be evil again. No. It's explained very well in the movie what exactly happened, what she was doing, what she wants. I mean,
that is the whole I'm evil and I'm evil again. What she did with the fresco reveal to me was more character development for Odin. Not necessarily for her.
Well, it was for both. You know what I'm saying? Mean, yeah, it was for both.
I got more of a, oh my God, Odin's got a very storied past and this dark history that we never knew. And I thought Odin was the benevolent Dumbledore-like leader, warrior surely, but he rescues Loki as a baby from the frost, you know, a little abandoned frost giant baby, and adopts him as his own. Right. You know, he's this really complex character, and then you find out. Even before that, he was a crusader who would go around killing and massacring and taking over conquest. He was all bloodlust, just like Hela.
Right.
You know. Your mileage may vary, and I loved Cate Blanchett in the film. I just felt, you know, oh, okay, this is the bad guy, and she's unstoppable, and there's nothing we can do, and she's more powerful than anything else.
So then let me ask you. Thanos, okay, he wants to get the Infinity Gauntlet, and he wants to destroy and take over the universe. Why?
Yeah, well, because of a chick, man.
No, he's trying to impress a girl, man. We're talking about the Marvel movies. There is no chick.
Not yet.
No, exactly. So why does Thanos want to take over the universe?
Well, remember at the end of the original Avengers, when his major domo said to beware the Earth because to battle them is to court death, and he smiles.
Yeah, he turns and gives him that grin.
So he has a thing about conquest and killing and death? Like, I don't know, Hela?
Right.
My point to you is that
You can't compare Hela to Thanos. We don't know nothing about Thanos.
Right now, what we do know about Thanos, his motivation, unless they suddenly in the Infinity War, he's going to be nothing but a lovesick puppy. And believe me, they're not going to do that.
I wish they would.
No, they won't. They will not. They will not. It will not be. Thanos wants to take over the universe because he just dug a chick. It's not going to be that. I promise you, it's not going to be that.
Well, when you reduce it like that.
I've done some amazing things to try and impress a girl.
I was going
to
say.
Exactly.
That's a very relatable motivation that would humanize Thanos to a point where we would. Why do we like Loki so much? Because we can identify with him.
Right.
We can link with him.
Correct.
And that's why Loki's
my favorite villain.
We didn't identify with Ultron. We didn't identify with the Yellow Jacket. We didn't identify with the Abomination. We didn't identify with these characters. But I think if you humanize a villain, again, the best villains in the world, God bless you, Vincent Price, the best villains in the world believe that what they're doing is right.
Yeah.
And Hela does not think that. I guarantee.
Hela does not sit there going, oh, I'm so evil. How evil am I, executioner? Oh, you're evil, your highness. I'm evil. What she thinks she's doing is for the betterment of the universe. She does not, she wouldn't, in no circumstances would she say, oh, yes, I'm the bad guy. I'm the bad guy and Thor and them are the good guys. She would not couch it in those terms. She sees it as, this is my role, this is what I do, this is the glorious purpose that, to steal a line from Loki, that Odin and I had set upon ourselves at the beginning of time, and he suddenly chickened out.
It's still to kill and to rule.
Right, but what I'm saying is...
That's pretty one-dimensional.
That doesn't mean she considers herself... So is Thanos! So is Thanos!
Well,
Gentlemen.
I disagree.
What we know about Thanos to date, okay, is that he is, for some reason or another, he is collecting gems. He is basically a nebulous force in the galaxy, but an evil one. Nobody wants to go near him or cross any of his minions. The two Guardians movies have sort of established that he's bad and he's got bad plans. And most people are just better off staying away from him because if he's not hurting anybody right now, but that doesn't mean he's not gonna. The galaxy is sort of in an uneven state. Mm-hmm. Now, what nobody knows except the audience is that Thanos made the deal with Loki
to basically loan them the Chitauri. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows that except us. So then the only other thing we know is that he wants the stones for some reason. Now, yeah. Comic book people know that glove is going to reshape reality. Red Skull lives. But we don't know what the Marvel end of this is. Remember, these guys have done a really good job of taking the bare bones and some of the meat on these Marvel stories and reshaping it into a turducken.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. And so we don't know what form the turducken is going to take yet.
Yeah.
I think it's really a smart idea that Aaron has that Hela may also be death in this particular story. Yeah, that would it just solves a lot of problems.
I would like that because it would be a little bit more humanizing for the CGI Thanos, which I know it's Brolin, but you know, he's still a CGI Ultron type of villain. I always prefer my villains to be real in flesh and on set. But
well, and that was something else that they did with Blanchett. I mean, maybe her battle horns were CGI,
right?
But for the most part, she was completely in place at the time.
Oh yeah.
Which makes those scenes with her and Hemsworth, mm-hmm. I don't think people give Chris Hemsworth enough credit for being a good actor. He's very charismatic, but anybody who can hold your own against Kate Blanchett in a scene, has my eternal respect because she by all rights will walk over whoever. You know, yeah, I kind of want to see Meryl Streep as a superhero so Kate Blanchett can walk all over her.
Well, you know, we got a little Glenn Close in the Guardians too.
That's true. We did.
That was a lot of fun.
And by the way, I'm not, when I say about a character's, a villain's motivation, I'm not so much saying that what Hela wants to do is new or novel or has never been seen before. That's
right,
not what I'm saying.
Superhero movie. Yeah,
I'm saying that, you know, her view of herself is not, I am a villain, I am the scourge of the universe. That's not how she views herself.
She doesn't think of herself as a villain. Yeah, she views herself as
she's the god.
As
I mean, she's very
royalty.
Proud of the fact that she's the goddess of
death. I am
the goddess of death.
Correct.
Yeah.
And she it is her role to basically bring the universe to heal.
Yeah,
that is her function. That is why she's there. And even if I don't think they're going to do it, but even if Thanos down the road, we discover, oh, it's just because he really had a thing for Hela. And that's why he wants to destroy the universe, because he had a thing for Hela. To me, that doesn't suddenly make him, oh, what a great villain he now is, because he was in love.
But it gives him a weakness. It gives him a weakness that all villains have to have something that you go, oh, that's it. I'm doing it because I'm a bad guy. You know,
remember something else, guys. We've got two. This is a two-part movie.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they have to introduce in terms of explaining it to the audience in this two-part movie is Thanos' motivations. Yeah. Because every other character we've seen, we've met, we've hung out with, the only person that needs fleshing out at this point is Thanos.
Exactly.
Do not be surprised if the first 15 minutes of this movie, when it happens next May, center on Hel coming to Thanos because she needs to remake Asgard and needs something from him to do it. Maybe the Infinity Stone, maybe whatever. And he says, I have a better idea. And then this becomes a palaver that they have to do. Yeah. Or whatnot, you know. Right. So don't be surprised.
And by the way, I'm expecting, it wouldn't surprise me if Thanos has more to do with his view of the universe rather than I dig a chick. I really don't think that's where they're going to go with him. I think they're going to work that into his motivation. But he's called the Mad God for a reason.
So, I thought they were called the Titan. He's a Titan in the movie.
Correct.
So he's in the same realm as the Collector and the Gamesman.
Right.
Or the Gamesman.
Yes, some of the elders of the universe.
Correct. I think it's going to have more to do with his view of the universe. Like, he's not happy with the order of things. He thinks something went terribly wrong. He thought there was a purity at the beginning of the universe when the stones were formed, and now that purity has been tarnished. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why he would want to do what he's doing. I don't believe that the sole motivating factor is going to be, I dig a chick. I really don't.
I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I just think that's not going to be the only thing. I'd like to see multi-layers
The scenario Mark just painted sounds very, very plausible to me, Hela comes to him or he comes to her and they're like, hey, look, we can help each other.
The timeline's a little skewed. We're gonna get to Hela's fate at the end of this movie because that's where I'm going. But.
Okay.
But let's not get there before we get there.
All right. Go. Yeah.
So Hela battles Thor and Loki. Hela soundly defeats Thor and Loki, and most importantly, destroys Mjolnir.
Yep.
Just shatters his hammer. Oh my God, that's Thor's hammer. What? Oh my God. You know, that's a big deal.
I felt an aching loss. Like when Hedwig got killed.
Yeah, we all went, but wait a minute. He's Thor. He needs his hammer. Yeah. And then hops aboard the Bifrost. Now, here's interesting. The Bifrost is open. They zip in. Hela jumps in as well. Was that the only way she could have gotten to Asgard? As we all know, there's one way to Asgard, and that's the Rainbow Bridge. If she didn't hitchhike, essentially, with them on the Bifrost, she would never have gotten there, right?
But Heimdall was the one that's supposed to keep that he can open it selectively for people.
Right.
Heimdall is the one who can keep people away. He's the guardian, so he could have opened the Bifrost for Thor and Loki and not let Hela enter.
Right, but you are correct, Joseph. She needed the Bifrost because later on it becomes a plot element. Right, when Heimdall takes the sword. She has to go find the sword because she needs that in order to open up Bifrost and start traveling places.
And there's our MacGuffin. You know, we got to get that piece.
Right.
There's a missing piece, the arc, the sword. That's my motivation. I need that so I can go conquer the world or the universe or whatever. So without that, let's take it back another step because Heimdall is no longer the guardian because of Loki. Because when Loki took over as Odin, Heimdall obviously sees everything. He knew exactly what was going on. So he abandoned his post because he was accused of treason by Odin slash Loki.
Right.
And so to save himself, he abandoned his post and he went on the lam, as it were. He's a rebel. He's Rogue One. So on the Bifrost, we lose Loki. He gets popped out somewhere. We don't know where he goes. And of course we have Hela on Asgard and we have Thor, banished as well to the planet of Skar. Skar? Is that how you say it? Skar?
Sklar.
Skar?
Really?
Where? Yeah, I don't know what do you call it. Yeah. But anyway, so Thor's out and Loki's out and Hela's on, Asgard and makes very quick work of the Warriors Three. Now there's a bit of a shocker there because we got Ray Stevenson as Volstagg and we've got Hogan and you know, all of them that we liked and we got to know over the past three movies or two four Thor movies killed like that. Just gone.
No, like, you are correct. And that's where I think a lot of the controversy has.
I felt like the Transformers movie when Megatron just kills some of the main Generation 1 Transformers in that battle on the ship. And you're like, but that's Ironhide. You can't kill him.
Right.
But there he goes. He's dead. You know, and you're just like, what? I mean, that was like my childhood being ripped away. Well, my brother's childhood, my vicarious childhood. But anyway, it was a shocker to that level where they just kind of dismissed it.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Okay.
It's true.
I'm okay with it. I was perfectly all right.
Yeah,
with it.
I was okay with it.
Mark, talk about that because you said something really cool on Facebook as far as why you think that happened. You know how it played out the way it did, and I actually agree with a lot of what you said. So yeah, address that if you could.
Oh, are you referring to I don't think that was me that said that, but anyways. No, that was
I could have sworn. No, yeah, because you were saying that part of why, you know, the Warriors 3 played a certain role. Oh, maybe that wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
The idea that the Warriors 3, again, in the world where Thor is the straight man and the scowling stoic Viking, the Warriors 3 were there to provide what he himself was not providing, that humor, that levity, that, you know, I am the lion of Asgard, says Volstagg while, you know, drinking a big horn of mead. And because Thor wasn't doing that. Thor was sitting there scowling, wondering why he wasn't off fighting frost giants. And so although the way they did it, I felt was a little too cavalier, and I think it could have been worked into the story a little bit better, show them resisting a little bit more, trying to collect pockets of resistance against Hela here and there, whatever. I mean, we can talk about how they did it all day long and what we would prefer to have done, but ultimately they were removed because the purpose they served was no longer needed. It was no longer there. Thor was removal, that character now.
Their removal in such a swift fashion also accentuates the power of Hela. She came in and made short work of these amazing warriors, and you're like, oh my God, if Volstagg doesn't even get a line out and is killed, I mean, they put Ray Stevenson in that makeup and that costume, and he stood there and he went, bleh, bleh, and he's dead. You're like, but no, wait a minute. That's the line of Asgard. What the hell?
Yeah.
And it makes Hela so much more powerful, who strolls in villain-like and sashays by and goes, oh, I'm bored with you. I'm killing you. I'm the goddess of death. You know?
It also gives Heimdall a much bigger role, which is something that people have complained about for two Thor movies. Heimdall is the one who leads the people away instead of the Warriors Three, we have a little bit more parity in that regard. So I really didn't have a problem with it. I was not a fan of the Warriors Three in the comics, not so much. I felt like they kind of took away from Thor when I was reading the comics. And so for me, I it wasn't a loss as far as I was concerned, but. Yeah. I could get why some people were upset.
Yeah, it's a plot point. You have to kill them. Like a major powerful character gets killed off. Like the appearance of Negan in Walking Dead. He's got to kill a main character, and you go, "Oh, he's a serious guy." Yeah, well, you know, Hela had to kill some main characters, so you go, "Oh, wow, this is serious." It is Ragnarok, by the way, folks.
It is Ragnarok. She ain't playing.
Yeah,
right, right.
She ain't playing.
Right.
Now, ultimately,
I think, and it's funny. I wonder what the decision would be. What the decision was to leave sort of Hogan as the last guy that's really sort of putting up a fight there. Because, you know, Fandral, boom, Volstagg, boom, out of the picture. And then Hogan kind of goes in there and you're like, hey, I wonder what Hogan's going to do. So I found that very interesting.
And this is just typical. It's so typical for these types of movies. This is your last chance. Surrender. No last chance. Surrender. Just go.
You know, kill her.
Right. I don't know who you are. But didn't you just listen to me? I told you. I mean, that was a great line too. Yeah. Did you not hear what I just said? Exactly. I just told you who I am. So that's going on. Meanwhile, Thor ends up on Skaar.
Skaar. Yeah, Skaar.
And in the clutches of the Grandmaster. Now let's take a moment to honor a national treasure, Mr. Jeff Goldblum. As the Grandmaster, who is just delightful. When Thor first meets the Grandmaster, retreated to a Willy Wonka, even down to the music, moment of, you know, you're going to meet the Grandmaster, and Thor's all freaking out, and it's a big deal, and it's this guy in sandals and a robe who's Jeff Goldblum, and he's not being anyone but Jeff Goldblum, in my opinion. He's just playing himself, which is brilliant.
I don't think he's capable of being an actor anymore. I think he's only capable of being Jeff Goldblum. But it's such a great read, and I kind of hope that at one part in the Infinity War, either movie, they reunite him and Benicio del Toro. I just kind of want to see those two bounce off of each other, you know.
And they probably
even
will.
If they're just figuring out. Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Just to have them arguing over the odds, like a table full of these characters. Some of them knocked down. Some of them in their hands going, "No, you said this was going to happen, and it didn't. Look, why are we fighting about this? It's just a game, you know." I want to see that so bad.
Well, in fact, so here's my prediction. Going tying this back to Thanos. I think they're going to be the exposition boxes. I think people are going to go, God.
Oh, they're going to be the Greek chorus for this?
They're going to tell the Avengers what the hell Thanos wants. They're going to appear or be approached. Because they're going to go, what does he want? Oh, my God, he's destroying everything. He just killed Thor. He just killed Iron Man. What are we going to do? And then here come the two brothers, the two elders, and they're like, you guys might want to sit down for this.
Here's what's going on.
Yeah, and then I think they're going to go, Thanos, you know, point A, point B, point C, point D. He's mad. He's mad. He really digs this chick. You guys got to stop him.
He really digs this chick. And and by the way, they're not going to do that, but you can almost see Jeff Goldblum going, there's this lady that he kind of digs. And, I can see the hand gestures and, and Del Toro's very bombastic.
Love is love.
And the collector's like, Diggs, he loves her. Love. What is love? Maybe he loves her. I suppose
love's rather fleeting. I think this is more of a dalliance.
That's brilliant. I would love to see them.
Disney Studios, we are available. You can call us.
But and I liked it as quickly on the Grandmaster. I like his design elements where they do have a link to the Collector being brothers, where the Collector had dark circles under his eyes, black fingernails, and that black line on his lips. The Grandmaster is blue. He's got blue fingernails and that blue line on his lip. Yeah. There's a link. You could look at him and go, where have I seen this before? Yeah. So it's very well done. Yeah. So Jeff Goldblum, the Grandmaster, obviously has not slaves. He hates that word. We'll call them what would he say? You're prisoners with jobs.
Yes,
So the prisoners with jobs he puts on display in this grand arena and has this his amazing champion who was brought to him by Valkyrie, played by Tessa Thompson. And Valkyrie's first appearance, as Aaron said earlier, is a grand comedic, glorious moment of her model walking down the catwalk and then stumbling off and falling because she's drunk. And she drinks a lot.
Yeah.
There was some controversy about the character where there was a scene that was cut where when Loki gives her flashback to where the Valkyries fell at the hands of Hela back on Asgard, where one of the blonde Valkyrie is killed in front of her. And it's a big moment because apparently that was supposed to be her lover. She was supposed to be bisexual and was portrayed as bisexual in the comics. And they filmed a shot of her bedroom and the blonde walking out and them having a moment where you accept, in this day and age, it's not a huge deal. And it wasn't really cut for any reason other than the fact that it just pacing, timing kind of a thing. Right. But there was a little bit of a backlash, of course.
Yeah, where in the battle montage do you slip that?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. It had to be her memory. I don't know where it was. But obviously, Waititi didn't cut it for any other reason that, they shot it. It'll probably be on the DVD, but it works. Her character, and it fits her character, which doesn't change. It doesn't make her better, worse, or anything. It's just a part of her character, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
So we meet Valkyrie. She captures Thor, delivers Thor to the Grandmaster, who then gets a quick haircut from Stan Lee.
Yes.
Before going into battle.
I love what they've done with the cameos.
Yeah,
but I have two begging pleads. It's really okay if Stan sits the next few out, and B, it is not necessary to name check creators on every one of your properties. I just watched an episode of The Gifted where the moving truck that's driving by is Claremont Moving Company. And I am more than ready. That was awesome in 1993, in 1989, in 1997, in 2001, in 2004. We're 2017. We're so past all of that now. I get it. Let's stand. Honestly, they should have stopped with Stan and the Guardians 2 talking to the Watchers. That would have been that need to be his final cameo.
You know what? I respectfully, my brother, I disagree. I think every Marvel movie needs to have Stan Lee. I need to see Stan. If I don't see Stan, I'm upset. Just a moment. Even if he's a picture on a poster or walks by in the background, he doesn't have to have a featured cameo, but he's got to be there.
They've done stuff where he's been in the crowd and pulled a girl to safety in Spider-Man. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's cool. As long, you know, yeah. Or he was the guy that drank the juice with the little bit of the Hulk blood.
Right.
On the Incredible Hulk.
Or one of my other favorite ones was, trying to get in, even the non-Marvel movies, trying to get into the Fantastic Four wedding of Reed Richards and Sue Storm and being denied because he wasn't on the guest list.
Right.
Bits like that, which I think are cute.
Well, I like to see him just because I just don't know how much longer we're going to have the opportunity to see Stan in these movies. So I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all.
Jesus Christ, 15 movies isn't enough?
never enough. He's getting on in years, I'm not going to begrudge him his cameo.
All right. All right. You fine. You both have very large hearts, and I am the monster. Let's continue.
You should be courting death.
speaking of being a monster, ladies and gentlemen, our monster, Maximilian, has got the red eyelid, which means this is going to have to be a two-parter.
Okay.
We are going to have to break at this point. We have not even scratched what we need to scratch on this. We haven't even talked about the Hulk. We haven't even talked about the games.
I agree. This is going to be a two-parter.
And you know what? I blame Thanos for taking us into this little wormhole and talking about his happy blue ass, purple ass. And now we have to backtrack and pick up where we were. So curse you, Thanos. Your reach is far and great and grand. The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and is written by Aaron D'Arrive, Mark Finn, and Joseph Fokinos. Oh, by the way, our fourth companion, Mickey Finn, did send a note, and he is actually on a quest for the Infinity Stones here on Earth. He got a lead, so he's I don't know if he's an agent of Thanos these days, or I don't know what he's doing, but he was talking about some stones. Maybe he was thinking of a different stone.
Hey,
I don't know.
Maybe Thanos digs Mickey.
Maybe Otis Scuggins got kidney stones, and he got the wrong idea.
Maybe Thanos digs Otis Scuggins.
You know what?
Moving on. With additional material produced by Tony Stark and Tanalir Tivan. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot, still currently nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge Bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Dr. Stephen Strange, which is why these keep refilling. Our sound editor and accidental producer is Mickey Finn. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron D'Arrive.
I dig
it. Our Norse mythology expert is also Aaron D'Arrive. Marvel's The Mighty Thor appeared first in Journey into Mystery number 83 and was created by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack King Kirby. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive, and technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher D'Arrive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. We're going to finish our discussion on Thor Ragnarok. Please always tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. I'm Joseph Fotinos, reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
This concludes part one of the podcast. Please turn your device over to listen to part two.